This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswein on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswein.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Very excited today because the person that I'm going to interview today epitomizes what the name of my show is all about. Real Life. Okay? Because I am interviewing this person because of the fascinating story that he has to tell, and he's got a lot to say. I am introducing you to Kirk Nolan. Hey, Kirk, how are you?
Wow, that is a buildup.
You like that?
Oh, man. You're like, wow, man,
I hope I don't disappoint
you. Yeah, what is the difference between real life and this alternate reality that we're in right now?
You're going to help us weed through that. But Kirk is a director, he's a producer, he's a comedian, he wears lots of different hats. When did the comedy hat start?
Oh, wow. That started a long time ago. I was, I took a date to Mark Ridley's Comedy Club, and it was really in the old days before it was actually the Comedy Castle. It was downstairs underneath a restaurant.
Spaghetti place, I think.
And it was
like
a Tuesday night. Yeah, it was a Tuesday night, and I took a date because comedy was really big at the time, and I wanted to impress this girl, so I took her out to the Comedy Club. And on the open mic was a bunch of comedians, but one in particular was Tim Allen.
Oh, wow.
And I remember watching all the comedians, and then at the end of the show, they said, hey, does anybody want to do comedy? If you want to, you can sign up on the list and you can try it. And I was actually going to Specs at the time.
Okay. And just in case people don't know, Specs Howard School of Media Arts, it's here in Michigan, in case you're listening in another state or country.
Yeah. So I was going to a media school, and I was thinking about, and I had a job, and I was thinking about getting into comedy. So I took about a month and kind of put an act together and then went on stage, and the rest is history.
Yeah. And how long did you do comedy, or are you still doing it?
Almost, I think once you're a comic, you're always a comic.
Right.
It never stops. You just never stop. So every element of my life, I mean, most of my adult life, I was a comedian. So about 20 years now. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's just the bedrock of everything of my life. Even now I'm a filmmaker, and that's the bedrock of my filmmaking skills and my social media filmmaking. I do a lot of social media filmmaking, which is like very small short form video. And that really comes down to a joke, the structure of a joke. So how do you cut a joke? So everything's comedy for me.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I wanted to interview Kirk is because there's such a, I think, I don't know if the word's dichotomy or what I'm looking for, is you had this
conundrum.
Maybe that's what you are. You're a conundrum.
I'm a conundrum.
We have this part of your life, which is I'm writing jokes and I'm having a great time. But there was a whole other side to your life that not a lot of people knew about. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I had become a very successful comedian. I was traveling all over the world, and I was actually headlining in Las Vegas, and I was moving along pretty good. I had moved to LA, and all the things that you think, you know, life is just going the way that you plan. Beautiful wife, everything was going great. And then things started to kind of fall apart. And one Christmas, I went for a walk with one of my dogs, and unbeknownst to me, I had developed a staph infection called strep bovine, and it was on my heart wall, and it had finally migrated to my brain, the lining of my brain. And on this walk, suddenly it was just lights out one night, and I just woke up like 2 weeks later in intensive care, having no idea what had just happened. And the doctors first said that I wouldn't live through the night because they had found me the next morning. It was winter and they had found me in the snow. And by the time they had gotten to me and taken me to the hospital, I was 80 degrees.
Ooh.
And the doctor said, dead people are warmer than that, so he's probably not going to live. Maybe he can be an interview with a vampire. But other than that, he's not going to make it. Then they said I would be a vegetable. Then they said, oh, when
you
they
got
finally
upgraded to
got
vegetable.
Me to live, yeah. Okay. Then they were like, oh, he's going to come out and he's going to be a vegetable, and he probably won't have all of his faculties and stuff. And so to make a long story shorter, I ended up living through all of that. But that sort of sent me down a much darker path, because people don't realize that once somebody is on life support for a long period of time, a lot of things happen to you. And there's a term for it, which I'm not going to bore your listeners with, but when you're in this state, your subconscious is picking up everything around you. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're in the hospital and people drop a bedpan or someone screams or all of that you take in. So when you come out of that state, suddenly people who are come out of it are sensitive to light, sound, they're scared of things.
Do you have memory of hearing, smelling?
No, none at all. I have no memory from the walk, taking the walk and then waking up, just nothing. There's just nothing there, which also makes a very terrifying feeling when you come out of that, because you're trying to, because you can see the look on everybody's face, the terror and the horror that they've been through, and you feel so guilty. You feel guilty
because right.
you've done something and you haven't done anything. It's not your fault, but it doesn't stop you from feeling that way. Mm-hmm. So I came out of that just sitting in rooms by myself. I became agoraphobic. I couldn't leave the house. And I just kept falling farther and farther down this rabbit hole. And I was seeing therapists and psychiatrists, eventually trying to get help. They started prescribing me a lot of medication, and I just kept getting farther and farther. And finally, they prescribed me a medication called Seroquel that finally I had an adverse reaction to. And it just sent me so deep down into the rabbit hole that one day I ended up sitting under a tree with a gut full of pills, ready to die at sunset.
And when you made that decision to do that, and you have that in there, were there any events that occurred during that time? Did you have any flashes of wisdom? Did anybody, I don't know, I'm quoting here, from the other side come and help you? Or,
you know what is wild is that every time I tell this story, it's so strange to tell it sometimes because I feel like Haley Joel Osment, because the minute I start talking about it, I'm like, people. I see dead people. Yeah. Because the first time that I almost died, it was just lights out. Nothing.
You don't remember anything?
Nothing.
Right. Nothing.
And that really made me angry. I mean, it really made me angry. I'm an agnostic. And so I thought, wow, if there is a God or some universal power, I'm the dude that you should just give a peek behind a veil to, because I'm a storyteller. I'll come back and I'll tell people. I'll be like, I met God. He's freaky. He's fun. He's whatever. You know what I mean? I'll just be like, he's got 9 arms and he's the bomb, man. We played tennis or we went bowling,
He didn't give you that. You didn't get that.
Nothing. I got nothing. So okay. I actually told stories about it in videos. And I actually called the universe out. Like, how could you do this to me? You just threw me into darkness. What a jerk you are. Like, the universe is just one big screw up for me, right? And so I actually said, if all people, show me the money, show it to me.
Right.
So now I end up going through this suicidal attempt. And I can tell you every second and every moment that happened. And as a Buddhist friend of mine said one time, be careful calling out the universe or calling out God, because you may get your answers, but you may not like what they are and you may not understand what they are. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. But what happened was the second time I ended up dying, I'm sitting on under a tree waiting for the sun to set. And the weirdest thing happened, the sun would never set. No matter what happened, it wouldn't go down. In fact, it just kept getting hotter and hotter on that day. And each time I tried to find a place in this desolate field that I went to die in, something would happen. And the first time was my stepfather, who had died 6 months prior, shows up. So I'm getting ready to fall asleep and I hear, Kirk, wake up.
His voice.
I hear his voice like I hear your voice
really,
right now.
It's an audible sound.
Kirk, wake up.
All right.
And I turn and I look and he's standing right there. Now, me and my stepfather did not have a good relationship. So I'm like going, great. Now the universe is sending me somebody I'm going to argue with in the field while I'm dying. This is really not what I was looking forward to,
And was it an outline of him or actual look physical to
him? No, I mean, like you're sitting right there. He was just, he's right there and he's yelling at me to wake up. And it was that voice that like I remember as a kid, yelling at me for something, And so I was very angry. So I got up. stumbled up. I mean, I'm stumbling all over the place. I'm falling. I'm hitting my head. I mean, the drugs are kicking in.
Right.
And I'm falling. I'm looking for another place to go because I want to get away from this guy. I don't I don't want to deal with this. I dealt with him in life. I don't want to deal with him in death. You know, it always cracks me up when people go, we're gonna spend eternity with our loved ones. I'm like, these are people who can't even get along during Christmas, for God's sakes. You want to spend eternity with them? They can't even get along and open up presents. They're screaming at each other. So
stepdad following you. You're trying to get away.
So I move to get away from him. I find another place to lay down and die. And as I get ready to close my eyes again, my wife's grandfather, who had just died a few months earlier, he's just standing there. And he, this time it's not an audible voice, but it's a voice in my head talking to me. It's this wonderful feeling because I never had a grandfather. Mm-hmm. And he was probably the closest archetype to that for me. He was just this sweet old man, loved him a lot. He was always nice. We always had these really great conversations. And so here he is. And he had this really beautiful wave. You know, he would always wave to everybody goodbye. And like when we would leave family get togethers. And so he was waving to me, like I remember. And then he started waving for me to follow him.
Huh.
And so I got up and I started following him and I'm stumbling. And each time I fell, he would come over and he would go to reach for me and I couldn't touch him. But it was like this weird thing where I felt like he was picking me up. Like without that hand reaching out, I wouldn't have gotten back up. Because you have to remember, I took 3 bottles of pills.
Wow.
So, I mean, I took enough medication. I was making sure that I was going to die. So all of this is just kicking in and it's just getting worse and worse. And my motor skills are just getting worse and worse. And so he just kept picking me up and leading me home and finally led me back to where I lived. And then they all found me, my wife and everybody who had sent out a police report, sent the police out looking for me, filed a police report, missing persons. Mm-hmm. And they rushed me to the hospital and I ended up surviving that.
And so the grandfather didn't actually say anything. It was more of just a feeling.
Yeah, but he was talking to me in my head. You know what I mean? And it's weird because this is the part that's weird. As an agnostic, I used to say to people when they would talk to me about the afterlife, I'm like, come on, science. Don't you see science? Come on. And even my friends, when I tell them this, they go, Kirk, you know, you had all this medicine in you, you know, your engrams and all the things that were going on. Well, they were going, you're hallucinating. All the people who are listening right now are going, well, look, there's factual evidence that will prove that all of this was happening because of the medication. You're hallucinating. You're this, you're that. But I say to all of them, I feel like Jodie Foster at the end of Contact, where she goes, I had an experience so real that I can't reconcile that. I can't, it's so real to me that mm-hmm. I can't get away from it anymore. And I realized I called the universe out and told the universe, show me the money. And the universe went, okie doke, here you go.
Yeah.
And then after it happened, I was like, all right, what do I do with this now? I have no clue now what I do with this because it just freaked me out.
Now, did that experience change your beliefs at all?
Well, I have to tell you, the answer is yes. And part of the reason that it totally changed, and I want to say this part so that people really understand how profound this experience was after you try to kill yourself, they take you and put you in a hospital for a week. You know, it's like 3 days of observation and all of that, and make sure that they get you on medication again and make sure that you're okay and you're not going to do it again. Because people who kill themselves, the statistics are they'll try it again and again and again. I don't know if you know that. So mm-hmm. it's very important for people to be aware that if somebody tries to kill themselves, you know, you really got to watch people because they'll try it again, you know? And so here I was, I came back home after that experience. My wife happened to be out of town, so I'm alone again. So it's the perfect setup for me to kill myself again because I'm still depressed and I'm still sad over all this. So this spot that I had picked was this place where the only way to get to it was through this trail, and there was a hole in a fence. And I had only found this because my dogs had went through the fence one day, had went through this hole.
Okay.
And I had to find them because they were running in the woods. They went through this fence and I couldn't find them. So there was this hole in the fence, and like a rabbit hole. And I had went through this fence to the other side, to this big pasture, and this is where I was going to die. So now I go back after I get out of the hospital to go try to retrieve things like my favorite hat, my iPod that I all took with me to die. I'm going to listen to music and I'm going to leave like a rock star, you know?
Sure.
And I go through the hole in the fence, I find the tree, and then I turn around to go find my way back to the hole in the fence, and I can't find it because the other side is so full of trees and brush that it's disappeared. Like, I can't find it. So I'm like, so now I'm rambling. I'm just walking through this meadow for like 25 minutes trying to find this hole. Keep going up this little ravine, to where the fence is, trying to find it. And it takes me 25 minutes to do it. And I am sober.
So when you were drug-induced craziness, you could find the hole somehow. But when you're completely sober, couldn't find it.
I found the hole because of the grandfather. I would have never found the hole if he hadn't led me through the hole and through the path that led me home. And so that experience, yes, has changed my beliefs profoundly because I'm like, I'm sober and it's 25 minutes and I can't find this hole in the fence. Mm-hmm. How in the world did I survive this and get through it? Mm-hmm. So then you're left with the question of why? That's the, you know, and like my friend who's a Buddhist again, he goes, Kirk, you're on the island, you've landed, and now you're dragging the boat of whys around. Why? Why this? Why that? Why this? Why that? Right. Like, but that's just me. That's my nature. I ask why to everything. So I'm trying to figure out now why I'm still here.
I was going to say, how you doing on those answers?
Yeah. Believe me, I'm not calling the universe out again.
That's
I'm
right, like, ah, right. Learn my lesson.
I learned my lesson now. I'm not going to dare them again.
Now, you talked about your wife and you talked about people around you, because obviously when you're going through this state, because, you know, after what happened to you, it's a form of mental illness, and then the suicide attempts and all this. Right. How do the people around somebody going through that, what can they do? What can they do? How can they help?
I mean, I know this sounds like a cliche answer, but love is always the answer. I mean, trying to love and understand people and trying to realize that sometimes people are just not in their right mind. I mean, this isn't something, I mean, when I tell people that I'm a suicide survivor, or when they watch my videos and, you know, I have a vlog that I vlog about this all the time because I feel like now I have this responsibility to try to help others because of this, because I came out the other side. You know, every time people just go, wow, Kirk, you're like the strongest person I know. And I just never would have imagined that you would be the one who would try to kill himself. And I always say to people, even the strongest warriors can be broken. Mm-hmm. It can happen to anybody. It just takes, you know, I came from a very abusive background. And over the years of my life, a therapist once said to me, you know, you never really repaired anything. You just kind of covered those wounds up and you moved on. You're good at moving on, Kirk, and rebuilding, which is a good trait, mm-hmm. but you never really resolved anything. And then all of a sudden, that moment at Christmas was that moment that it tore all the scabs off of every wound. And all of a sudden you were on fire and you didn't know what to do. And it just changed everything. I mean, it just changed, that moment changed my brain chemistry. It just changed everything, you know? So, and there's a difference between depression and clinical depression, and people need to understand that, you know? I mean, you can be depressed. Everybody's depressed. People get depressed.
All
I mean,
the time,
you cannot be depressed in this world, you know? I mean, I always say to people, you're not crazy. It's the world that's crazy around you, okay? Uh-huh. You're okay. So there's being depressed and recognizing that. And then clinical depression is actually chemical imbalance that happens with
people.
What
are some of the symptoms of clinical depression?
Well, I think clinical depression is I'm not an expert.
Right. So, just give me your opinion.
So I think clinical depression, at least for me, was so much more of being in the valley of really having no answers whatsoever. And I made a piece about this called The Voice.
It's a great video.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're actually going to have that and all the information to your website, as well as information on the National Suicide Prevention Hotline.
Awesome.
That will all be up on our site as well.
Yeah, so The Voice really was about trying to help other people who don't understand depression understand what goes on in the mind of a person who's dealing with The Voice, which is what I was dealing with, this voice that kept telling me I was worthless, I was no good, that everybody around me would be better off if I wasn't here. And people always talk about suicide is people who commit suicide are cowards, or this is a cowardly act or a selfish act.
Right.
And I'm like, there's nothing selfish about this. I mean, I don't know any suicide survivor that I've ever talked to who wasn't thinking about their family, their children, just thinking that, oh, if I wasn't the albatross around their neck, their lives would be so much better. That's how you feel. You start to, and that voice just keeps reinforcing that. So what I would say to people who start to deal with the voice,
yes,
is immediately start finding other people to talk to. Because what I did was, what family members did with me was they isolated me because they didn't understand. They didn't know how to deal with it. So I was left alone. And then when I took that medication and I started falling, I started having an adverse reaction. There was nobody around to tell me I was having an adverse reaction. I didn't know. So I'm falling deeper and deeper into this hole. So it's really important to find other people that you can reach out to help. It's important for those people who are listening, who have family members or friends who are depressed, to try to listen without judgment, because it's hard enough to feel like you're going crazy or you feel like this is happening. But then to try to reach out to people and then have them judge you, that just...
Or
that just compounds it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what people say. Get over it. Put your big boy pants on. Do whatever.
But this is serious business.
Yes.
And you should keep reaching out. And even it doesn't even have to be somebody that you know. If you suddenly feel compelled to start talking to a complete stranger, then do so. Anything that has to do with communication and letting people know how you're feeling, that's going to be the most important point if you are feeling this. I really encourage you to watch Kirk's video. We will have a connection to his website there as well. You know, and maybe when you're watching this, you're identifying with it and you're saying, wow, that's me. Or I've felt that before.
Absolutely. And there's so many places on social media now. That's a really great thing. There's groups. There's places where you can reach out and you don't have to expose yourself. You know, it's like you don't have to personally expose yourself. You can write to somebody. You can talk to people on boards. And the thing is, when you're in this, you feel like you're the only one that's feeling like this, and you're not. And the minute you can start seeing that there are other people, that's why I make the videos. That's why a couple times a week, somebody writes me and goes, oh, thank you, because I now realize I'm not alone.
Yeah,
I realize that a comedian, somebody like you who's that successful could get, look, Chris Cornell is the perfect example.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if that's not a wake-up call, I don't know what is. I mean, for people to realize we have to talk about suicide. It is a pandemic in this country that is just swept under the rug, and people don't talk about it. And it's so important to talk about it because the science shows that when people can talk about it, it saves their life. That's fact. You know, the letting go of it and feeling like somebody loves you and they're going to listen, that is what helps.
See, didn't I tell you guys? Fascinating story. Told you.
I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad I'm alive to tell it.
So we're glad you're here. We will have every single link up on ours. We have come to, believe it or not, to the end already.
Wow.
I know. Isn't it crazy?
That was like so fast. So quick. I got a million things to talk about.
I know. You and I could sit here for hours and talk. We'll have to bring you back.
Okay. I would love that. So
we've come to the end of the show that we call the RL3, three silly, goofy questions that we love to ask our guests. And you have graciously agreed to let us do that to
this
you.
This is my James Lipton moment,
This is your James Lipton moment. And I thank you. The first one that I want to know, just because I'm curious myself, you are a superhero for a day, one whole day. You have to dress like that superhero. You get all the superhero's powers, but for one day, you are this particular superhero. Which one is it?
Wow, that's a good one. That is a
He's
good
like,
one.
Do I want to be in spandex or not?
Yeah, I don't really want to be in spandex. That's a really, of course. You're just like, is there a superhero with a jumper? Because I don't want to be in one of those either, you know? Especially if it's plaid or something, you know, like something like that.
All right, what do you pick?
A leisure suit superhero? I don't know. I would pick Superman. I would pick Superman for the reasons that Superman is the greatest of all superheroes because he has all the powers and he's always trying to be human. And that's the hardest thing of all.
And he gets to wear a suit some of the time.
Yeah, but that's, yeah, that is cool. Yeah, and he gets hot chicks. Yeah,
well,
and
he's flies cool around looking. With him in his arms. I mean, all right.
So who doesn't like that? Yeah, X-ray vision? Come on.
Fantastic. Here we go. Second question. What historical time period would you most like to visit?
Ooh, man, these are good questions,
Thank
Lisa.
You.
Wow. I think the
1920s.
I love the Roaring Twenties. Yeah, the Roaring Twenties is just I like that people dressed up all the time, you know, and they always looked, you know, dapper. I like even like the word dapper, and it love the cars, and I just love everything about that.
I love that answer. And your third and final, and you've probably heard of this before, but here on the show, we call it your fantasy name. So it's going to be the first pet that you ever had and the street you grew up on. What's the name of the first pet you ever had?
He was a German shepherd named Caesar.
Caesar? Okay. And what street did you grow up on?
I got bad memory because of my accidents, so I'll don't remember
whatever,
that one.
Is there any, give me the oldest street name that you remember living on. And it doesn't matter, even if it was like...
I don't remember.
The one you're on now.
Yeah. I tell you the street that I'm on now?
Sure, why not?
Tracy.
So your name is Caesar Tracy.
Caesar Tracy.
Caesar Tracy.
Is that my porn name?
We call it a fantasy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I would call it a porn name.
Caesar, everybody, Caesar Tracy.
Caesar Tracy. Boom, chicka, 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 boom.
Kirk,
hi, I'm Caesar Tracy. I'm here to fix your sink. Boom, chicka, 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 boom.
Thank you so much
for being on the show.
We really appreciate it. Everybody, make sure you check out all the links we have online there. And
thank you.
We're actually really happy you're here with
us. I'm so happy you had me. Thank you very much.